Coming up on Fronteras, the honor guard does more than post and salute the flag at a funeral. This week, they're standing vigil with the 19 fallen firefighters in Prescott, Arizona.
We don't leave them alone. We would not want to be left alone. We would want one of our brothers or sisters there with us.
We meet the honor guard. Also on today's program, San Diego is the number one entry point for Mexican meth making its way to cities and towns across the U.S. Mexican drug cartels just recently started making meth.
Especially the Sinaloa cartel has looked at this and said, why are we the middleman? Why aren't we producing this ourselves?
San Diego's role in the international meth trade. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations, funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. The debate over immigration reform has shifted to the GOP-led Congress. This week, President Obama met with members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus to discuss how they might proceed. But as David Martin Davies explains, there is some division in the caucus over border security.
The immigration reform bill that passed the Senate included a $46 billion border surge. That requires more border fence and the doubling of the Border Patrol. Several congressmen from Texas who have districts on the border are opposing the border surge. Congressman Pete Gallego, who has a massive district that runs along the West Texas-Mexico border, said he spoke out against the border surge in the meeting with President Obama.
Having traveled most of the border in the district last weekend, I can tell you that I didn't find a lot of support for wall, and I didn't find a lot of support for doubling the United Border Patrol.
But Gallego rejects the characterization that the Congressional Hispanic Caucus is split. He says they are focused on trying to get the GOP leadership to stop ignoring immigration reform, and then they will work out their differences. David Martin Davies reporting.
During a recent five-year period, three times more meth was seized at San Diego ports of entry than all other U.S.-Mexico border crossings combined. And meth seizures this year are on track to far surpass 2012. As Jill Replegal from our Fronteras desk reports, that's despite laws in both countries designed to crack down on the drug.
Customs and Border Protection agents here at the San Ysidro port of entry face a tough balancing act.
Where are you going?
Facilitating international trade and travel on the one hand, on the other, trying to stop drugs and other illegal cargo from getting into the U.S. In recent years, they've seen a dramatic increase in one particular drug. Methamphetamine seizures at San Diego's ports of entry have risen by more than 300% since 2008. San Diego has a long and troubled history with meth. During World War II, meth spread among many American service members stationed in the Pacific Theater. When they came back to the U.S., primarily through San Diego, they brought their addictions with them, and they helped spawn a domestic meth industry. Joe Garcia is deputy special agent in charge for ICE Homeland Security investigations in San Diego.
Gangs, biker gangs, usually control the meth production and distribution. And Mexico used to provide the precursors.
Precursors being the chemical ingredients that go into meth. In the 1990s, San Diego became known as the meth capital of the country. Rampant abuse led to several high-profile crimes. There was the man who hijacked a tank and drove it down the highway, and the couple who scalded their four-year-old niece to death in a bathtub. The damage caused by the highly addictive drug spawned a crackdown on domestic meth production. Garcia says with continued demand and restricted supply, organized crime saw a big opportunity.
Especially the Sinaloa cartel has looked at this and said, why are we the middleman? Why aren't we producing this ourselves?
Now, Garcia says, more than 80% of the meth seized in the U.S. is made in Mexico. And that's despite Mexico's own attempts to curb its production. Much of that meth comes through San Diego, in part because it's home to the busiest land crossing between the U.S. and Mexico. More legal traffic tends to come with more illegal traffic. But history and geography also play a role. David Shirk is an expert on Mexican drug trafficking at the University of San Diego.
One of the major criminal organizations working with meth has historically been based in the Pacific Coast area of Mexico, in the Colima region, the so-called Colima cartel.
In the late 90s, that cartel first established a major meth trafficking route north, 1,500 miles up the coast to the California border. Now, the powerful Sinaloa cartel controls the majority of the meth trade.
So it makes a lot of sense that this would be moving through San Diego, through the newly established or newly consolidated networks under the Sinaloa cartel, which dominate drug trafficking in Baja California today.
Most meth comes across the border in passenger cars, in ever more elaborate hiding places. On a recent morning at San Ysidro, Customs and Border Protection agents called in a mechanic to detach and then slice open the gas tank of a white Jeep Cherokee. Inside, they pulled out 23 packages of marijuana, some of them soaked in gasoline. In all, the stash weighed 52 pounds. Heightened border security has made smuggling riskier, but the profits are extraordinary, says Linda Frakes. She's an assistant U.S. attorney in San Diego.
The range is at a conservative level between $14,000 and $19,000 a pound when it comes into San Diego. And the price pretty much doubles from what that pound is in Mexico to what the pound is in the United States, just by crossing the port of entry.
It's very difficult to know just how much Mexican meth is making it through San Diego ports of entry. But public health workers say meth use in San Diego County is again on the rise. Still, border authorities think part of the reason drug seizures have increased is because they're doing a better job of detecting drugs. The long lines at San Ysidro give drug-sniffing dogs time to weave in and out of the cars and alert officers to hidden stashes. Powerful X-ray machines can spot packages hidden in secret panels and gas tanks. Still, Agent Garcia is realistic about authorities' chances of finally beating the traffickers.
They're not going to go away. They're going to go do something else. But we're trying to get them to go away from meth because meth just ravages any user.
In San Diego, I'm Jill Replogle.
Just days after 19 sons and husbands were killed on the job in Yarnell, Arizona, people from around the country came together for a massive public memorial. As Nick Blumberg reports, thousands of first responders, community members, and volunteers honored their sacrifice and made it clear that the people who have lost loved ones are far from alone.
Howard Johnson hasn't had much sleep.
We got in, a little after one? Yeah, we got in a little after one.
That's one in the morning. Five short hours later, he and three other members of Spokane County Fire District 4 were getting some breakfast on their way up to Prescott Valley to take part in the memorial service for the 19 men killed fighting the Yarnell Hill Fire. The guys from Spokane are also involved with the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. Just the day before, they'd helped organize a memorial for a first responder in their home state. After that was over, they went to the airport and headed to Arizona. But they are not complaining. It was important to them to come for Tuesday's remembrance and beyond.
Our team's been tasked. We're going to be helping with four different of the individual members' funeral services.
The firefighters from Spokane were just a few of the scores of first responders who came for the Yarnell 19's memorial. Emergency crews drove in from around the state, Casa Grande, Bullhead City, Daisy Mountain, and from around the country, Silver City, L.A., Sacramento. Looking around, the parking lot was filled with dark navy dress uniforms, purple commemorative ribbons, and the comforting white and red of American Red Cross trucks. Also there was Lutheran pastor Mary Larson of Clarkdale.
We're here to help out the Prescott Valley and Yarnell pastors because they're already overwhelmed with dealing with people in grief. Their hands are pretty full right now, and it's really a privilege to come and help.
Leaders from around the region and around the country came to pay their respects. Governors Jan Brewer of Arizona and Susana Martinez of New Mexico, Senators Flake and McCain, Cabinet Secretaries Sally Jewell and Janet Napolitano, and Vice President Joe Biden.
We're humbled to be here with you.
Biden spoke to the families and friends of the lost men from experience. More than 40 years ago, his first wife and one of his children were killed in a car accident.
The day will come when the memory of your husband, your son, your dad, your brother will bring a smile to your lips before it brings a tear to your eye.
Tears did flow freely at the service, as did applause for the sacrifice of the fallen men from the Granite Mountain crew. Perhaps the most resounding applause went to its one surviving member, Brendan McDonough, who read the Hot Shots prayer.
For if this day on the line, I should answer death's call, Lord, bless my Hot Shot crew, my family, one and all. Thank you, and I miss my brothers.
McDonough's brothers have each been accompanied by an honor guard member since shortly after they were killed, and they'll have honor guards standing by them until they're buried. That means a lot to Flagstaff Fire Captain Bill Morse.
It kind of cuts into your heart like the bagpipes when I start playing. Every grizzled old fireman that's been on for a long time and never shows emotion, you start playing the bagpipes, and that all changes for him.
Near the end of the ceremony, four Marine Corps jets flew over in tribute. But as quickly as they came, the jets cleared the horizon. Soon, the hum of media vans and out-of-state fire trucks will no longer ring in the air. The men who gave their lives to protect Yarnell and People's Valley will be buried. Howard Johnson of Spokane Fire knows how much is ahead for the people left behind by the fallen Granite Mountain hotshots.
After today is really the most important part, because that's when, you know, a lot of the emotions start, everything kicking in, and there's no longer everything going. That's when the family really needs the support. It's the next day and the day after and the week after.
In Prescott Valley, Arizona, I'm Nick Blumberg.
The honor guard does more than post and salute the flag at a funeral. This week, they're standing vigil with their 19 fallen brothers.
We don't leave them alone. We would not want to be left alone. We would want one of our brothers or sisters there with us.
The Honor Guard, tradition, and so much more. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. There were five funerals Wednesday in Prescott, and there will be 19 in all for the 19 men who met their fate battling the Yarnell Hill fire. And at each service, there will be a special honor guard who will post the American flag and salute their fallen brother. They are a ceremonial guard, carefully chosen from among military, safety, and law enforcement to provide funeral honors for fallen comrades. It may seem like a formal gesture. From the Changing America desk in Prescott, Laurel Morales reports that it's much more.
It's called Honor Watch, and it began here the night that 19 of the 20 Granite Mountain Hotshot crew members died. Prescott firefighters draped each body with an American flag and stayed with them on the hill all through the night until they were taken to the medical examiner's office in Phoenix. And even then, Eric Caputo says, no one left their side.
The reason we do it is so that they are never alone. This is a tough time for them, you know. I mean, if you think about it, even in the afterlife, you know, they just left. They have nobody. Well, they've always got us.
Caputo is a firefighter and commander of the Flagstaff Honor Guard. He explains each of the 19 men has been accompanied by an Honor Guard volunteer since their deaths. They typically take six-hour shifts, so there is someone there 24/7.
Even if you don't know them, it seems like when you guard somebody, you know them when you're done with your tour. And it's an honor. It really is an honor to be in the Honor Guard. It's a privilege.
As the procession of white hearses drove the 100 miles from Phoenix back to Prescott at the beginning of this week, the Honor Guard lined the street, holding flags in the stifling desert heat. Inside each hearse, Caputo says another Honor Guard member sat vigil.
Present! On!
A couple days later at the memorial service in Prescott Valley, the Honor Guard quietly march, post flags, turn, and salute.
Order! On!
Eric Caputo has a special assignment to escort the only survivor, Brendan McDonough. Caputo is beside the young man who stands with slumped shoulders as McDonough reads the Hot Shots prayer.
Lord, bless my hotshot crew, my family, one and all. Thank you, and I miss my brothers.
The Honor Guard presents each family with a flag and a bronze Pulaski, the axe-like tool used to dig containment lines around wildfires. Caputo gives one to McDonough and makes sure he makes it through the emotional ceremony. And his job isn't done.
I will check on Brendan. I do have a lot of friends at Prescott Fire. And I will make sure, and they will make sure, that Brendan is looked after. He does not need it, but they will make sure if he needs anything, he's got it.
Caputo estimates there were 1,000 Honor Guard members at Tuesday's service from all over the world. He says even though they don't get paid, these are coveted roles. Caputo will now help bury all 19 firefighters and support their families.
We owe it to each other. We owe it to those families who put up with what we do on a daily basis to send our brothers and our sisters, to send them off right.
He humbly repeats what seems to be the Guard motto. It's an honor and it's a privilege. I'm Laurel Morales in Prescott.
Immigration officials have resumed a program to fly Mexican deportees into the interior of the country. From Phoenix, Jude Jaffe Block reports the first flight returned 133 people to Mexico City on Thursday.
The thought is that if Mexican deportees are transported all the way back to their hometowns, rather than dropped off at the border, they'll be less likely to try to return to the United States. In a statement, Immigration and Customs Enforcement said the program will reduce the likelihood that deportees will fall victim to human trafficking or other crimes in border towns. The effort was piloted last fall. In April, the Department of Homeland Security signed an agreement with Mexico to make the initiative permanent. The flights leave from El Paso for Mexico City twice a week. Once in Mexico, the Mexican government will provide the deportees with transportation to their hometowns. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Jaffe Block.
With summer temperatures soaring in the Arizona desert and across the Southwest, immigrants crossing the border illegally are finding themselves in trouble. U.S. Border Patrol trauma agents already rescued hundreds of people in the weeks before the first day of summer. Frontera's desk correspondent Michelle Marisco recently spent time with those agents and filed this report.
616-454 making their way down from
Border Patrol search and rescue agent Jerry Carrasco and his partner scanned the radio traffic. It's hot. The sun is a melting yellow orb rising over the jagged stone peaks of the Babarkivi Mountains in southern Arizona. Mexico is 40 miles away. Anybody who's made it this far has been walking for 2 or 3 days in the desert. A man called 911 at dawn. A smuggler left him to die when he couldn't keep up. Carrasco is waiting for a second team of agents who are out tracking the man. The second team radios in. They found someone, but Carrasco's not sure if it's the person who called 911 or yet another migrant in need of help.
I'd say about 15, 18 miles from South Mountain, west of South Mountain.
That's a long way.
It is. Hopefully, once he gets the communication, confirmation.
So far this year, nearly 100 people have been found dead in Arizona's southern deserts. Those are only the bodies that have been found. It's not known how many actually died. University of Arizona researchers have been looking at the data from the last 12 years. They found that more bodies were discovered even as apprehensions dropped. On a day like today, with the sun now burning overhead, the human body dries out quickly. Core temperatures start to rise.
Your body temperature just skyrockets. If you're hovering around 100 degrees, once those cooling mechanisms stop, you're going to be up in the 106s, 107s. At that point, we're actually killing tissue. Cells are dying, and it just starts snowballing from there.
The radio blasts again. The second team found the man. Carrasco drives his SUV to a spot just off Arizona Highway 86. The second team's German Shepherd barks nearby.
Aquí me dejaron tirado desde ayer, el coyote. Sí, aquí.
Luis Otero tells the agents that he paid a smuggler to bring him from Mexico to Tucson for a job. He injured himself. The smuggler left him behind. His face is flushed and he's breathing hard. He walked 3 days. The agents found him because they got a tip that he was wearing a distinctive pair of Nike shoes.
And I started following those shoe prints, and they were kind of circling around trees and looking for shelter, and then I came upon the guy with a Nike shot, just basically tracking him out towards that tree.
With the highway traffic roaring behind him, the agent gives Otero a bottle of water, then a second, then a third. He gasps as he drinks from it. Agents rescued nearly 200 people in the past month alone here. Most of the calls for help came from immigrants dialing 911, just like Otero. Carrasco says he doesn't know how many people are not found. Nobody does.
You're just there to do as much as you can, and if I can go home at the end of the day knowing that I did everything that I could, I don't say that I get jaded, but you learn how to handle it, and you learn how to cope with it. You have to learn how to cope with it, or else you go crazy. You won't be able to last very long.
The agents put Otero in the back of the truck. He'll be processed and then deported. As they head back to Tucson, the radio chatter keeps coming in. There are more migrants roaming the desert in panic. It's 4 p.m. and 103 degrees. Reporting from the Tohono O'odham Indian Reservation, I'm Michel Marisco.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our main handle is Fronteras Desk. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.